Krishna, 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 Krishna,
hey. Krishna, 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 Krishna,
hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Rakshamam.
Krishna, 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 Rakshamam.
Krishna, 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 Pahimam.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam.
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam.
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam.
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam.
Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna hey.
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 Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Rakshamam.
Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Rakshamam.
Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Pahimam.
Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna,
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam.
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam.
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam.
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava,
Krishna, 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 hey.
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 Krishna, 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 Rakshamam.
Krishna, 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 Rakshamam.
Krishna, 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 Pahimam.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam.
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam.
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam.
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam.
So now that we've had some background information about Krishna, we will discuss
one of Krishna's infinite activities, far beyond the realm of matter, having nothing to do with material contamination, material qualities, material forms. So we talked yesterday about how Krishna only had 16,108 wives. Tonight we will talk about how Krishna married his first wife during his appearance in this world. So, there was one demon named Jarasandha, and he was so determined to fight Krishna, he was so envious of Krishna, that he had attacked Krishna 17 times and failed each time. Obviously, he was simply giving Krishna some fun. Krishna was toying with him. We discussed yesterday how the living entities have the fighting propensity, because Krishna has the fighting propensity. Whatever Krishna does, he enjoys, whether dancing with his girlfriends or fighting demons, herding his cows, whatever. Krishna is full of infinite ways of enjoying. And we are full of zero ways of enjoying. So, 17 times Jarasandha attacked, each time defeated. Finally, for the 18th time, he attacked. He attacked the city of Dwarka, Krishna's personal city. So, Krishna decided, I don't want to have a fight this time. I don't want the citizens disturbed in the city by this fighting. You see, Vedic warfare means only between the military class. The civilians are never involved. So, Krishna left the battle, walked away with his two lotus feet. Why is Krishna said to have lotus feet? Krishna is also said to have a lotus face, lotus hands. Because in this material world, the lotus flower is the most beautiful thing. Therefore, Krishna's beauty is compared to a lotus flower. Have you ever seen a lotus flower? So, although Krishna's feet are as soft as fresh leaves, newly grown leaves, still he walked away from the battle. So what did Jarasandha think? Aha! He's finally surrendered. He's finally realized, I am the greatest. So he began to pursue Krishna. This activity of Krishna's leaving the battlefield gives him the name of Ranchor, one who has left the battlefield. Whatever Krishna does is glorious. Even when Krishna so-called flees the battlefield. Generally, for a warrior to vacate or to leave the battlefield is considered cowardly. Just like in the Gita, Arjuna wanted not to fight, and Krishna was telling him, you're a coward. No one will accept this. You're disgracing me. You're supposed to be my friend. You want to give up the fight. But Krishna left the battlefield, much to Jarasandha's delight. So Krishna is glorified as Ranchor or Ranchorji. What was Krishna actually showing? His opulence of detachment. The Lord is full of six opulences. Sad Aishvarya Purna. Aishvarya. What is the verse? Aishvaryasya. Who knows? Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yasasastriya jnana vairagyasya. These are the six opulences of Krishna. All wealth, strength, knowledge, beauty, fame, and renunciation. So what does it mean that Krishna is full of renunciation? At any moment, he can display complete detachment. He had beaten Jarasandha 17 times, obviously showing the opulence of strength. But this time, for his own personal pleasure, he wanted to demonstrate renunciation, detachment. So he just walked away, on foot. So naturally, Jarasandha the demon thought, just see, the coward, he's afraid of me. When you're absorbed in demoniac consciousness, what does it mean to be absorbed in demoniac consciousness? To have no desire to follow the laws of the Supreme. No understanding of Dharma. Simply, whatever I think, that's the best thing to do. Demoniac life means intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling. You don't care to understand that there are reactions to your sinful activity. If it feels good, do it. That's demoniac life. So, when you're a demon, you want to imitate Krishna, and you refuse to follow Krishna's instruction. And you become very proud of your own foolish abilities. So Jarasandha, the classic demon, had been beaten in fights 17 times, but this time Krishna walked away, so Jarasandha thought, aha, just see, as always, I am the greatest. Who could have doubted it? Why should there have been any doubt? So, then Balaram joined with Krishna. Together they walked away with Jarasandha pursuing them. So then, Krishna and Balaram came to a big mountain and they decided to pretend they were tired and they would go up to the top of the mountain on the peak and rest. Just pretending. Part of Krishna's fun. So, they went to this top of this huge mountain and rested there. And Jarasandha thought, okay, now I've got them. I've got these two nonsenses. I've got a brilliant plan. I'll set fire around the peak of the mountain, burn them to death. So he did that. He spread petrol around the peak of the mountain and lit it, knowing that now I've got them. They're trapped. There's no way they can escape. But what did Krishna do? He and Balaram jumped from the top of the mountain down to the ground. No problem. So Jarasandha thought they were certainly dead. But Krishna had another purpose in mind. Why did Krishna really walk away from the battlefield? A small reason was that he didn't want the battle fought around his personal city. Was it Mathura or Dwarka? Which one? He didn't want the battle fought around his city. And the main reason was that he had gotten a letter. He knew that it was time to marry Rukmini. He knew this is not the time for fighting. This is time for a romance. Krishna knows how to do everything perfectly. He had already beat this filthy demon 17 times. So, you know, it's time for some new fun. So right in the middle of the battle, only Krishna can do this, right in the middle of the battle, he walks away. Not on a chariot, he walks. In no anxiety. He knew, it's time for me to have my pastime of marrying Rukmini. So, after Krishna jumped, he and Balaram jumped from the peak of this extraordinarily high mountain. Jarasandha thought that's the end of them. So Krishna went back to his palace. Meanwhile, in another city, there is Rukmini, the daughter of the king of, what, Bhishmaka? Is the king's name Bhishmaka or in the city named Vidarbha? Huh? Yeah, so. Each king had five sons and one daughter, and the daughter was beyond description. So, most everybody in the city knew this daughter is the perfect match for Krishna. And even the girl's father knew, yes, Rukmini is meant for Krishna. But Rukmini had a brother named Rukmi who hated Krishna. And he knew, my daughter is meant for the demon Shishupal. And my sister is meant for the demon Shishupal. Demons, they stick together. So Shishupal was also a demon, just like Jarasandha. So they're always making scams together. So Rukmi thought, yes, my sister is the perfect gift to my demon friend, Shishupal. So anyway, Rukmini, she had already heard about Krishna. Sometimes Narada Muni would come to her palace and other sages, and they would talk about Krishna, and she would really get attracted. So in her heart, she had long ago decided she could only marry Krishna. Actually, who is Rukmini? She's actually Mahalakshmi, the supreme goddess of fortune. Just as Krishna expands himself into other forms of Godhead, similarly, Srimati Radharani expands herself into goddesses of fortune. So, that is who Rukmini is. She's Mahalakshmi, the goddess of fortune. So actually, she and Krishna are eternally eternal associates. But anyway, Krishna's just going through the fun of of all this. So, she had heard about Krishna, and she had decided, I can only marry Krishna. She had never seen him, but just by hearing about him, she became attracted. That is the power of hearing about Krishna. So, unfortunately, it was decided by her brother that she should be given in marriage to Shishupal. And naturally, she became very depressed. Oh, what to do? The father, out of affection for his son, he agreed. Although the father actually wanted her to marry Krishna, but he was attached to his son. This is the way of family life. Parents generally get attached to one child more than the others, no matter what they say. So, Rukmini was very depressed. She's only, 13 or 14 years old. That's the age in Vedic culture. Like the maximum age for getting married. It's not that, girls turn 13 and they start experimenting, for 10 years. And then maybe by the time they're 30, burnt out, exploited, reduced to a shrivel, then they decide to get married. That's the modern system, as you're explaining this morning. That's the so-called culture. I remember when I was young, my mother, she had married when she was, 22, the only, boyfriend she ever had. That's the system back in the old days, You marry your high school sweetheart or something. So, there's no question of shopping around and this and that, Things were more civilized maybe 50 years ago or something. So, my mother, she told me, don't do like I did. Have some experience, Shop around a bit before you make the final choice. That's considered advanced civilization, That the men and women, they just blow in the wind like garbage in the street, This relationship to that relationship. Like flies going from one garbage heap to another. And they consider that delightful, playfulness, cavorting. So anyway, that is not Vedic culture. In fact, the ideal in Vedic culture is that even boy and girl, they can be so young. The girl can be 6 or 7 years old. Even before both the boy and girl have reached puberty, they're married. They don't live together, but the parents arrange it. When they get older, they will marry. So even when the girl is 7 or 8, she knows, I have a husband. So she doesn't wander the streets like, a prostitute. She knows, I have a husband. So when they're young, 8, 9 years old, they just the girl will go to the boy's house, bring him presents. She doesn't know what it's all about, but still there's a psychological security and something psychological developing. So by the time the girl reaches puberty, then it's not like, oh, wow, what's happening to me? I need a man. No. She knows. The whole culture is arranged that it's already been settled since you were young. Before you realize what a man is, you already have your husband. So there's complete security. Now, what do Westerners think about that? How cruel, right? The girl hasn't had a chance to play the field. The girl hasn't had a chance, you know, to try this one out, try that one out, you know, and destroy herself in the process, you know, the empirical process of romance. So Westerners consider that to be very cruel, these barbaric arranged marriages. But it's a fact. Other than in the West, in most parts of the world, that's the way the system is. In India, in the Orient, everyone understands that things should be done in a civilized way. So, Rukmini, she was 13 or so, 12 or 13. So she was depressed. Oh, no. I meant for Krishna, and they're marrying me off to this demon, Shishupal. But she was the daughter of a king. So that means she was very proactive, as they say these days. That means she was very tactical. She wasn't just going to lay around and be depressed. She said, well, what's the point in, you know, simply being depressed? Let me figure out a plan. So she called one of her trusted brahmanas who could deliver a confidential message. And she said, please take a message to Krishna. So the brahmin, he carried the message to Krishna. Krishna was there in his palace in Dwarka. So as soon as he approached Krishna, Krishna got up from his seat and sat the Brahmin down, showing that the Brahmins, they are worshipable. Krishna's playing the part of a Kshatriya warrior, so he's giving all worship to the Brahmana, the spiritual intellectual. So Krishna began to ask him, my dear Brahmana, are you properly executing the religious activities? Is your mind peaceful? You see, the Vedic system means that whenever you meet somebody, you just don't address them whimsically. Hey, how you doing? How you going? No. According to their occupation, you greet them. So he's a Brahmin. He's supposed to be cultivating spiritual life. He's supposed to be able to give spiritual knowledge. And Brahmins, above all, are supposed to be peaceful and have no hankerings. They're not greedy. So the first thing Krishna asked him was, how is the execution of your religious functions going? And is your mind peaceful? Because those are the occupational characteristics of a Brahmin. And then Krishna began to ask, what about the king in your part of the world? Are the citizens happy in his kingdom? Because that's the occupational duty of a Kshatriya, or administrator warrior. He's supposed to keep the citizens happy in all respects. So Krishna said that when everybody's happy in the land of a ruler, that pleases me very much. How do you greet a Vaishya, a farmer? It's like when you come here. Of course, Payo, he's more than a farmer Vaishya. He's also Vaishnava. He's transcendental. But still, you can ask him about his, how do you ask him about his occupational duty? Are you properly taking care of all the animals under your care? Is the land being taken care of properly? The grasses are growing nicely? So everything in Vedic culture is scientific, nothing whimsical. So, anyway, Krishna asked the Brahmin how he was executing his occupational duties. Asked him about how the citizens were doing under the king in their part of the world. Krishna even took him, laid him down, and began to massage his feet. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone wants to be God, but here Krishna is showing that the devotee is more worshipable than the Lord. So then, of course, being omniscient, all-knowing, Krishna knew. He'd got a letter from Rukmini. So he asked the Brahmin, okay, if you like, can you kindly bring out the letter? So the Brahmana began to read the letter. It's very beautiful, actually. Let's see if we can find it. We can read it here. The letter from... He got out the letter which Rukmini had written to Krishna and said, these are the words of Princess Rukmini. My dear Krishna, O infallible and most beautiful one, any human being who happens to hear about your transcendental form and pastimes immediately absorbs through his ears your name, fame, and qualities. Thus all his material pangs subside, and he fixes your form in his heart. Through such transcendental love for you, he sees you always within himself. And by this process, all his desires become fulfilled. Similarly, I have heard of your transcendental qualities. I may be shameless in expressing myself so directly, but you have captivated me and taken my heart. You may suspect that I am an unmarried girl, young in age, and you may doubt my steadiness of character. But my dear Mukunda, you are the supreme lion among the human beings, the supreme person among persons. Any girl, although not yet out of her home, or any woman who may be of the highest chastity, would desire to marry you, being captivated by your unprecedented character, knowledge, opulence, and position. I know that you are the husband of the goddess of fortune, and that you are very kind towards your devotees. As we said before, actually, Rukmini is the goddess of fortune. Therefore, I have decided to become your eternal maidservant. My dear Lord, I dedicate my life and soul unto your lotus feet. I have accepted your lordship as my selected husband, and I therefore request you to accept me as your wife. You are the supreme powerful, O lotus-eyed one. Now I belong to you. If that which is enjoyable for the lion to eat is taken away by the jackal, it will be a ludicrous affair. Therefore, I request you to immediately take care of me before I am taken away by Shishupal and other princes like him. My dear Lord, in my previous life, I may have done public welfare work like digging wells and growing trees, or pious activities such as performing ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices and serving the superior spiritual master, the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. By these activities, perhaps I have pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan. If this is so, then I wish that you, Lord Krishna, the brother of Lord Balaram, would please come here and catch hold of my hand so that I may not be touched by Shishupal and his company. So there you have the perfection of love letter. Rukmini knew just how to motivate Krishna. Please, take me away with you so that I am not touched by Shishupal. Immediately arousing Krishna's chivalrous feelings. Yes, I will protect you from that nonsense demon, Shishupal. Don't worry. Hold on, I'm coming. See, actually, ladies, they like to do this. They like to play the damsel in distress. So this is the classic damsel in distress situation. And Krishna, he's enjoying all this. Yes, yes. No problem. No worries. I'm coming. So, the marriage with Shishupal had already been settled up. That means what? That Krishna actually had to kidnap her. That would make it even more relishable for Krishna. So, Many times this happens in between warriors that they kidnap someone for their wife, even at the person's wedding day, the girl's wedding day, they kidnap her and take her for themselves. So there's fighting there. This is Kshatriya life, warrior life. They like to fight. So Rukmini, being very strategic, the daughter of a king, she said, well, maybe Krishna might think that there'll be a lot of unnecessary killing if he fights and takes me away. Many warriors will be killed. Maybe even women around the palace will be killed if he just comes and raids the palace, drags me away. No. So she suggested the way. She said, Krishna, before the marriage ceremony in our family, before someone gets married, it is the custom that we go to the temple of the goddess Durga. And so that will be the opportune time for you to take me away. It won't cause so much carnage then. You know, all the innocent ladies won't be caught up in the battle. So then, as soon as he heard the statement of the Brahmana, he heard the letter, Krishna said, yes, I will go, he told the Brahmana. I will go to get her. I understand that she's been already offered in marriage to Shishupal. Forget it. I know that her brother Rukmi has arranged that marriage with Shishupal because he hates me. Never mind, I'm going to get her. I'm going to give a good lesson to all these evil princes. Just as fire is extracted and utilized after manipulating ordinary wood, similarly, after dealing with these demoniac princes, I shall bring forth Rukmini like fire from their midst. So then Krishna called his chariot, and they began to travel to Vidarbha. So meanwhile, the king, he's not very enthusiastic to hand over his daughter to Shishupal, but he was attached to his eldest son, so what could be done? So the citizens got ready for the gala wedding day. Marriage was a big thing back then, especially for princes and princesses. Mm. Nowadays, of course, marriage is, you know, a joke. But back then it was a big thing. Mm. So the whole kingdom was decked out for the great jubilee. Shishupal was there with his fellow demons. Shishupal's father was also there. Shishupal's father was named Dumagosh. That means one who's expert in cutting down miscreants. So Shishupal's father, he showed up with a few battalions because he figured. He's a Kshatriya. He was a military man administrator, so he figured there's a chance that Krishna might show up. So he brought a few battalions just to make sure his son, you know, got married with no problem. So, but you have to also understand, you know, the Kshatriyas, the warriors, they like this, you know. They're always looking for a fight. So actually, you know, yeah, Krishna might be there. Better bring some soldiers. We'll be ready for fight. We'll be ready for action. Kshatriyas never like to miss a fight. There's any chance, they're always ready. Go for it. So, as Prabhupada writes here, it appeared that Dumagosh, along with his son and other companions, it appeared they were going to the wedding place practically almost completely forgetting the marriage. Not completely forgetting it, but maybe they were going there to fight. The marriage is just an occasion, you know. Let's get it on. Let's fight. So anyway, according to the Vedic custom, guests are received very opulently in beautiful gardens outside the city when they come a long way. Just like when Krishna and Balaram and Nanda Maharaj went to Mathura, they rested outside the city. So King Bhishmaka received Shishupal and his party outside the city. And a group of famous demons in the Krishna book, they're all in cahoots together. Jarasandha, Dantavakra, Vidura, and Pondraka. You'll hear more about them later. They're a very infamous bunch. The Demon Squad. So, and they're a bit itching for a fight because there was some whispering going around that Rukmini had sent a letter, a messenger to Krishna. So all the Kshatriyas, the demons especially, we hear Krishna might come. We'll get that. We'll get him this time. So, Krishna had gone to the city just with the Brahmana. Just see how Krishna is showing. Supreme Personality of Godhead, fearful of nothing. He's walking into the most dangerous situation with just a Brahmana, who's a non-military person. Brahmanas don't fight. They're the spiritual intellectuals. Anyway, Krishna, so casual. Yes, I'll get Rukmini. Come on, let's go. But Balaram, he said, uh-oh, I know what's going to happen. It's going to be a big bang. There's going to be a big fight. Balaram said, come on, bring a couple of battalions myself. Balaram wasn't going to miss the action. Krishna's going alone, just a Brahmana. What kind of protection is that? I'll show up too with some forces. So, Rukmini's waiting inside the palace, hoping that Krishna will come. And she's thinking, complete anxiety. Oh, how unfortunate I am. It seems Krishna is not going to marry me. Krishna is not coming. There's only one night between my marriage day, and still the Brahmin messenger hasn't come back, and Shyam Sundar, Krishna, hasn't come. What's the reason? She began to think, maybe Krishna's rejected my proposal. And for that reason, the Brahmin, disappointed, has not come back to me. So, while she was getting more and more depressed, she began to cry. In total helplessness. See, Krishna knows how to increase the love. So, he waits just the right moment, and she's completely attached. Oh, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? He knows how to... Krishna knows how to play the scene, just wouldn't have been as intense. But he waited until she was in a bit of anxiety. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? You know the expression, you don't miss your water till the well runs dry. So Krishna made things a bit exciting. So then, all of a sudden, she saw the Brahmin messenger. Krishna actually knew about her anxiety, and he sent the Brahmana in to calm her down. Don't worry, I'm here. Have no fear, Krishna is here. So, Rukmini's father, King Bhishmaka, he heard that Krishna and Balaram had come. So, he figured they'd come to see her marry Shishupal. They're famous warriors, famous princes. So, yes, let me receive them. He received them properly. And meanwhile, all the people of the city, they began to gather around Krishna and just stare. This is Krishna. We've heard all about him. They were just stunned. And they began to think, there's no doubt that this is the most perfect husband for Rukmini. There's no doubt. So then they began to pray. They began to pray to the Personality of Godhead. Please, if we have any pious activities left in our bank account, let Krishna be able to marry Rukmini. Rukmini was a very popular princess, and all the citizens had great affection for her. They wanted the best for her. So then, Rukmini, surrounded by bodyguards, beautifully dressed, comes out of the palace to go to the temple of the goddess Durga. You see, it's not that she's going, it's not that she and her family were worshiping demigods like Durga, thinking them to be all in all. No, they're respecting the demigods, knowing them to be agents of Krishna. So, she's actually going to pray, please allow me to get Krishna. She's walking very silently and gravely. Her mother and her girlfriend were by her side. The wife of a Brahmana was in the center. She was surrounded by royal bodyguards. It's a big procession, musical instruments. So meanwhile, all the princes, there were so many visiting military men, great princes, powerful warriors from all around. They came for the marriage celebration. So they were all waiting outside the temple, actually just waiting to see Rukmini, because she was such a devastating beauty. They were actually, Kshatriyas are very proud. These warrior princes are very proud and puffed up. So they thought, they were still thinking, probably Rukmini, if she sees us on the way out of the temple, she'll want to marry us. They just thought, there must be a chance. We're all so, each one of us is so great. She'll probably, as she's coming out of the temple, even though it's the marriage day for her to marry Shishupal, if she sees me, she'll probably want to marry me. So, listen to the description of the transcendental form of Rukmini. No matter, this is transcendental. Her body was well constructed, the middle portion being thin. She had green eyes, pink lips, and a beautiful face, which was enhanced by her scattered hair and by different kinds of earrings. Around her feet she wore jeweled lockets. The bodily luster and beauty of Rukmini appeared as if painted by an artist perfectly presenting beauty, following the description of great poets. The breast of Rukmini is described as being a little bit high, indicating that she was just a youth, not more than 13 or 14 years old. Her beauty was specifically intended to attract the attention of Krishna. So meanwhile, as she's coming out of the temple, all the princes are checking her out, just giving you. And she wasn't in the slightest bit proud of it. Didn't get this. Not the slightest bit. Proud did she get? You know, all these powerful princes, you know, fully decked out. They're all, you know. So, her eyes moved restlessly, and when she smiled very simply, like an innocent girl, her teeth appeared just like lotus flowers. Expecting Krishna to take her away at any moment, she proceeded very slowly towards her home. Her legs moved just like a full-grown swan, and her ankle bells tinkled very mildly. So, the great chivalrous princes, warriors, they were waiting outside just to get a glimpse of her, thinking, she'll marry me if she sees me as she comes out of the temple. And when they finally saw her, they almost became unconscious with lust. Unconscious with lust. You can't conceive of that. They became so lusty, they almost blacked out. You can't conceive of that, can you, Ben? Full of lust, they hopelessly desired Rukmini's hand, comparing their own beauty with hers. That's the way you are when you're puffed up, you know. The men, they, she's so beautiful. Oh, like me. Of course. Each one was thinking like that. So actually, they became unconscious with lust, and they fell off their horses and chariots. You can't conceive of that kind of beauty. So, meanwhile, Rukmini is just walking slowly, thinking, when will Krishna take me away? So as she was adjusting some ornaments on her left finger, she happened to look up, and she saw Krishna in the crowd. Krishna, not at all being concerned with all the military forces there, just casually walked up, placed Rukmini on his chariot, and what? Furiously drove away? Dashed away like some criminal escaping the scene of the crime? Okay, let's get out of here. No. He just casually puts her on his chariot and slowly drives away. Totally agitating the demons. Slowly driving away without care concerns. So then, it's described that he took Rukmini away exactly as the lion takes the deer from the midst of the jackals. And then, meanwhile, Balaram shows up with all their forces, you know, just to, you know, make sure things don't get out of hand. But Krishna, he's just slowly driving away with his Rukmini, no care, concern. So then, Jarasandha, you see, actually all the princes, many of them were just unconscious on the ground and just coming to because of Rukmini's beauty. So they were a bit groggy. So Jarasandha, he was also there. He was a friend of Shishupal. So he began to roar, "How is this? How is this? Krishna is taking Rukmini away from us without any fight from us, any opposition. How is this? What is the use in our reputation as chivalrous fighters? What's the use? My dear princes, arise! Just look! We are losing our reputation by this action. Krishna is just like a jackal taking away the booty from the lions." So, and all the princes, they started to come too. As Prabhupada writes here, struck by the beauty of Rukmini, they had fallen from the backs of their horses and elephants, but now they began to stand up and properly arm themselves. Picking up their bows and arrows, they began to chase Krishna on their chariots, horses, and elephants. And then Balaram and his forces, they turn and attack the forces of Shishupal and his friends. So, it was a mighty fight, huge battle going on. Meanwhile, Krishna is just casually driving away. While he's casually driving Rukmini away, and right behind him there's huge battles going on, Rukmini just looks in Krishna's face with appreciation. "Oh, my dear Lord, just see you're going through all this just because of me." It's very important. You know, you must show appreciation for the male valor. You know, so Rukmini, being a princess, she knows just how to do it. "Oh, just see how glorious you are doing all this to rescue me." Everything is there in Krishna. The perfection of everything. So Rukmini, she's the perfect companion of Krishna, the goddess of fortune. So she knows just how to do it, looking in his face. "How glorious you are. I'm so appreciative of what you've done for me." So, as Prabhupada writes here, In a fearful attitude, she began to look on the face of Krishna, expressing her gratefulness that he had taken such a great risk for her sake only. Her eyes moving, she appeared to be very sorry, and Krishna could immediately understand her mind. He encouraged her with these words, "My dear Rukmini, don't worry. Please rest assured that the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty will kill all the opposing soldiers without delay." So then, Balaram and the soldiers began to just slaughter the opposing forces. Within a very short time, it was seen that millions of severed heads, decorated with helmets and earrings, had fallen on the battlefield. The soldiers' hands were cut up along with their bows and arrows and clubs. One head was piled upon another, and one horse was piled upon another. All the infantry soldiers, as well as their camels, elephants, and asses, fell down with severed heads. Nice marriage scene, huh? So then, you see, the enemy soldiers were being led by Jarasandha. You remember, Jarasandha had thought Krishna was dead. He thought that Krishna had fled. So Jarasandha, when he saw that they're being totally smashed and obliterated, he said, "Wait a minute. Why are we going through all this just because of Shishupal? He's supposed to be out here fighting, not us." Play today, we'll call it off. Because actually, it's Shishupal. He should be fighting to regain his wife. What are we going through all this for? Losing all our men? Millions of severed heads. So they said, "Well, if Shishupal is not competent enough to fight with Krishna, why should we lose our armies unnecessarily?" Therefore, they just stopped fighting and went away. So then some of the princes, they appeared before Shishupal, who was very discouraged, lost all his composure, all his energy, lifeless. So they began to tell him, "My dear Shishupal, don't be discouraged in this way. You belong to the royal order and are chief amongst the fighters. Take courage. Don't be disappointed by this temporary reverse. Actually, we're all just dancing to the will of the Supreme." In disasters, sometimes people can speak a little philosophically. They were telling Shishupal like that. It's just all the plan of the Supreme. What can be done? Not that they were pious, but they were just saying like that. You know, it's a good thing to say, you know. When you've been beat bad, you just say, anyway, it was all the will of Providence. But when you win, then you say, it's all me. So, the whole catastrophe of this defeat came because Rukmini's brother, Rukmini, was envious of Krishna and didn't want her to marry Krishna. So now Rukmini, he's determined to do something about it. He was determined to teach Krishna a lesson. So he called for his own armies and he began to follow Krishna's chariot with Rukmini to Dwarka. But first, before he left his city in pursuit of Krishna and Rukmini, he vowed to all the citizens of his home city. Especially, he vowed to the kings who had gathered there for the marriage. He said, "You could not help Shishupal marry my sister, but I cannot allow my sister to be taken away by Krishna. I shall teach him a lesson. Now I am going there." So he vowed before all the commanders and princes, "Unless I kill Krishna in the fight and bring my sister back from his clutches, I will never return to my capital city again. I make this vow before you all, and you will see that I shall fulfill it." So after he spoke these big words, then he gets on his chariot and tells his chariot driver, "Pursue Krishna after him. I want to fight with him immediately. This cowherd boy has become very proud because of his tricky way of fighting with the warriors. But today I shall teach him a good lesson. Because he has the impudency to kidnap my sister, I, with my sharpened arrows, shall teach him very good lessons indeed." This is demoniac, to think that Krishna is an ordinary person. Limited. So then he caught up with Krishna, because Krishna was moving away very slowly, not at all in anxiety about anything. So he stood before Krishna, yelling at him, "Stop for a minute and fight with me." So then he began to draw his bow and shoot arrows at Krishna's body. And he began to condemn Krishna as the most abominable descendant of the Yadu dynasty. He roared at Krishna, "Stand before me so I can teach you a lesson. You are carrying away my sister, just like a crow stealing clarified butter meant for use in a sacrifice. You are simply proud of your military strength, but you cannot fight according to regular principles. You have stolen my sister. Now I shall relieve you of your false prestige. You can keep my sister under your possession only as long as I do not pinion you to the ground for good with my arrows." So Krishna, after hearing all these crazy words, shoots an arrow, cuts Rukmini's bowstring. So Rukmini can't shoot any more arrows. Rukmini picks up another bow, shoots 5 arrows at Krishna. Krishna again cuts the bowstring. Rukmini picks up another bow. Krishna shoots 6 arrows at him. And then Krishna shoots another arrow, 8 arrows. The first 4 arrows killed the 4 horses of Rukmini. The chariot driver is killed by another arrow. And then the remaining 3 arrows cut the upper portion of Rukmini's chariot. So now Rukmini had no more arrows. So he began to pick up swords, shields, tridents, lances, and other weapons used for hand-to-hand combat. But Krishna immediately cut them all in the same way. Finally, everything else is not working. Rukmini just takes a sword and begins to run real fast toward Krishna, like a fly proceeding towards the fire. Then Krishna took out his own sword and was about to kill Rukmini immediately. What happened then? Rukmini stopped him. She fell down at Krishna's lotus feet and begged him, Yogeshwara! He's master of a mystic power. Yogeshwara! Don't kill him! She also goes, Jagatpati! Master of the universe! Don't kill him! She reminded Krishna, you are Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic power. You are Jagatpati, the master of the universe. Who is this Rukmi? He's so insignificant. Don't kill him. He's nothing compared to you. On her wedding day, what woman wants to see her brother killed? Even if he's a nonsense. Women are very soft-hearted, so. Please, Krishna, don't kill him. Jagatpati, Yogeshwara, don't kill him. Not on our wedding day. She was very happy to get Krishna as her husband, but she didn't want to lose her brother, especially on her wedding day, her oldest brother. I mean, her brother loved his sister. He just felt that she was meant for Shishupala. He didn't want to marry her to Krishna. He felt he was doing the best thing for her. So, Rukmini, she was full of anxiety. Her whole body was trembling. Her throat became choked up. And Krishna immediately became compassionate and agreed not to kill her brother. But at the same time, Krishna wanted to teach Rukmini a bit of a lesson. So he tied up Rukmini with a piece of cloth, and he snipped at his mustache, beard, and hair, leaving bare spots. Which for a warrior is like complete humiliation. It's almost as good as being dead, to be humiliated. Kshatriyas, warriors, they hate humiliation. So, then Balaram shows up. Balaram had just smashed all the opposing forces. So he arrives on the scene. And he saw how distressed Rukmini was. And he looked at Rukmi, who had been humiliated by Krishna, having his hair and beard and mustache cut, leaving big spots, bare spots. So in order, Balaram began to, you know, chastise Krishna in order to please Rukmini. Krishna, your action is not at all satisfactory. This is an abomination, very much contrary to our family tradition. To cut someone's hair and shave his mustache and beard is almost comparable to killing him. Whatever Rukmi might have been, he is now our brother-in-law, a relative of our family, and you should not have put him in such a condition. And then Balaram turns to Rukmini, and he gives her a lesson, too. You shouldn't be sorry because your brother has been made so funny-looking. Everyone suffers the results of their karma. Then again, Balaram turns to Krishna and says, my dear Krishna, a relative, even though he commits a blunder, such a blunder, and deserves to be killed, should be excused. Then again he turns toward Rukmini, and tells her, come on, don't you know? These are Kshatriyas. The duty of a Kshatriya, a warrior, is so fixed that even if you have to face your own brother in battle, you don't spare him. This way Balaram is just, you know, he's enriching the situation. So then Balaram began to speak some words of philosophy to Rukmini, how we're not the body. The soul is eternal. The body is temporary. So, finally he concluded, sweet smiling Rukmini, do not be aggrieved by false motives caused by ignorance. Due to false notions only, one becomes unhappy. But this unhappiness is immediately removed by discussing the philosophy of actual life. Be happy on that platform only. So then after hearing Balaram's instructions, Rukmini became happy and adjusted her mental condition, which was very afflicted because she saw her brother in such a degraded condition. So then, Krishna took Rukmini back to Dwarka and married her. And the brother Rukmi, he had vowed never to return to his city unless he killed Krishna and brought the sister back. So he just went to some isolated area and live like a hermit the rest of his life. For the time being, anyway. So there you have the perfect love story. So any questions? What do you think, Dot? Have you ever heard of such? Does it compare to anything in this world? Krishna is the reservoir of perfection. And that perfection is displayed in activity, the qualities. Now, do you think Krishna is going through all this just for some girl who's made of matter? No. Rukmini is actually his eternal associate, his eternal consort. She's purely spiritual. Nothing material about her. No material body. But Krishna is just having fun. One moment he's running away from the battlefield like he's afraid. Next minute he's capturing the most beautiful girl. Remember the scene, Rukmini walking out of the temple, waiting for Krishna to kidnap her. And all the princes are outside, waiting to get a glimpse of her. If she sees me, she'll want to marry me. There's no doubt about that. And then when they finally see her, they just black out with lust. What a scene. And then Krishna puts her on his chariot and just slowly goes away. Not racing away, just slowly. These are Krishna's pastimes. All right. What did you think of the part you heard? Huh? You can read about it, huh? How does this compare to dry talks about the oneness? Yes, you're right. All right. Hare Krishna, all glories of Brahma.
Jai, 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 Jai,